Thank you, Trevor. Let me encourage you to take a Bible and to follow along with the scriptures that we'll be looking at. We're going to start with a couple of Proverbs here in just a moment, but we appreciate your presence here today, and we would encourage you, if you have any questions about the things that are said and done, don't hesitate to bring that to our attention. I want us to start with two Proverbs that we have examined in our Wednesday night class, the book of Proverbs, or we are continuing to, and there are two that I'd like us to note that deal with the issue of adversity, but from slightly different angles. The first is in Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. There, this beautiful passage that talks about that sense in which one who will help through a time of adversity is to be desired and to be praised. But then Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 10 puts it this way: if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. As Chuck read for us a few moments ago, he talked to us a little bit about the context and the circumstances dealing with the rebellion of Absalom. If you are familiar with the biblical account of David's life, you will remember that following David's sin with Bathsheba, the Lord declared a judgment upon his house that the sword would not depart from his house. And that would first find its fulfillment in the sinful choices of two of David's sons. Amnon, one of his sons, would choose to actually rape his half-sister. And as a result of that, though Absalom waited for a time, another of his sons, Absalom, chose to take vengeance into his own hands and brought about the circumstances by which Amnon would be killed. David refused to really act to discipline either son. And though ultimately there was a time in which David and Absalom were reconciled, that would set the stage for what would turn into civil war and rebellion when Absalom, as he grew in the favor of the people, would ultimately, as was mentioned in the reading and in Chuck's comments about it, the time in which Absalom is going to come from Hebron and take over the kingdom, and David chooses to flee from the city rather than put the city in such difficult circumstances. You know, I can't think of a period that would be much more difficult than that. Civil war brought about by a father and son fighting with one another, a son trying to take the kingdom from another. And yet, during this time of such great adversity, there are four men that are probably not the most familiar to us, but there are four men that I'd like for us to spend a little bit of time looking at this morning that demonstrate some things related to the Proverbs that we just looked at, related to choices and attitudes that are either favorable or that are not the kind of attitudes that we ought to practice. The first of these men is a man by the name of Ziba. And we are introduced to him first in 2 Samuel chapter 9, verses 10 through 13. Ziba was a servant of Saul's house, and he was assigned to care for the lands of Mephibosheth. You may remember that David and Saul's son Jonathan were very close, and he had actually made a covenant with Jonathan. When David is anointed as king, Jonathan doesn't defend his household, but rather he recognizes this is God's choice. And David had pledged that he would remember the household of Jonathan. Well, after Saul and Jonathan are killed in the battle with the Philistines, David, when he comes to the throne, he searches out to see if there are any of Jonathan's family left. And there's a son named Mephibosheth that's lame because of an accident that had happened when he was a baby. And the nurse had tried to flee because of warfare and fallen. And as a result, he is lame. Well, when David learns about Mephibosheth, he assigns Ziba to care for the lands of Mephibosheth. Well, how does Ziba come onto the scene during this difficult time of the rebellion of Absalom? Go with me, if you would, to 2 Samuel chapter 16. And I'd like us to read in 2 Samuel chapter 16, beginning in verse 1. The text says, when David was a little past the top of the mountain, you remember in Chuck's reading, He's going to cross the Mount of Olives. There's a lot of symbolism that we'll see in David weeping on the Mount of Olives in the same way that Jesus, the night before his crucifixion, will weep on the Mount of Olives in the Garden of Gethsemane. But notice it continues. A little past the top of the mountain, there was Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, who met him with a couple of saddled donkeys, and on them 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a skin of wine. And the king said to Ziba, "What do you mean to do with these?" So Ziba said, "The donkeys are for the king's household to ride on, the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for those who are faint in the wilderness to drink." And the king said, "And where is your master's son?" And Ziba said to the king, "Indeed, he is staying in Jerusalem." For he said, "Today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me." So the king said to Ziba, "Here, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is yours." And Ziba said, "I humbly bow before you that I may find favor in your sight, my lord, O king." Now this might sound like, as we first read it, that this is something in which Ziba is caring for David. And that's, we're going to notice, it puts David in a little bit of a difficult position. Because Ziba does offer this care, and it seems that Ziba stays with him because ultimately he'll be among those that return with David. But the problem is, he lies about Mephibosheth. You see, Mephibosheth didn't really say that from what we understand in Scripture. He didn't really imagine that the kingdom would return back to him. What seems to be the case is that Ziba uses this situation to gain David's favor. And I want us to notice, look with me a few chapters over in chapter 19. Because as we remember from the account, what happens is, yes, Absalom comes to Jerusalem, but ultimately, when battle ensues, David's people are victorious, and Absalom is actually killed by one of David's men, Joab. And David then returns back to Jerusalem. But I want you to notice with me, 2 Samuel chapter 19, look down at verse 17, because we will see that as David returns, Ziba had apparently continued to care for him. But what do we learn about Mephibosheth? Verse 17 says, "There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him." This is as David's coming back. "And Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him, and they went over the Jordan before the king." But skip down to verse 24. Because when David comes back, he wants to find out, well, what's the story with Mephibosheth? Why did he stay? And I want us to read together beginning of verse 24. "Now Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king, and he had not cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he returned in peace. So it was, when he had come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said to him, 'Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?' And the Lord answered, 'My lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said, I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go to the king, because your servant is lame, and he has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God. Therefore, do what is good in your eyes. For all my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king, yet you set your servant among those who eat at your table. Therefore, what right have I to cry out any more to the king?' So the king said to him, 'Why do you speak any more of your matters? I have said, you and Ziba divide the land.' Then Mephibosheth said to the king, 'Rather, let him take it all, inasmuch as my lord the king has come back in peace to his own house.'" See, I'm inclined to think Mephibosheth is telling the truth here. And Ziba had used this simply as an opportunity to gain favor. And why would I say that? Well, he doesn't want his land back. He simply is glad that David is back. He, in fact, had not cared for himself during this time that David is away. And yet Ziba, I think, had taken advantage of this. Well, there's another individual during this same period, a man by the name of Hushai. And you may notice from the reading that Chuck gave us, we are introduced to Hushai. And let's read together in 2 Samuel chapter 32 and go down to verse 37. Because Hushai, we don't know an awful lot about prior to this, and yet I want us to notice what is said, because, you know, you talk about movies that will talk about secret agents and double agents. Well, Hushai is going to be put in a position in which he has to serve basically that function. As David is leaving the city, you'll remember that he's told that one of David's counselors, Ahithophel, is going to be with Absalom. He's going to counsel him. And when Hushai comes, I want you to notice what our text tells us, begin in verse 32 of 2 Samuel chapter 15. Now it happened when David had come to the top of the mountain where he worshipped God, there was Hushai the Archite coming to meet him with his robe torn and dust on his head. David said to him, "If you go on with me, then you'll be a burden to me. But if you return to the city and say to Absalom, 'I will be your servant, O king, as I was your father's servant previously, so I will now also be your servant,' then you may defeat the counsel of Ahithophel for me." And he goes on to describe that Zadok the priest will be there, and he encourages him to use that as a way to get information to David. Well, Hushai, in spite of the danger of this, follows through with what David says. He stays behind. He goes to Absalom in chapter 16, verses 15 through 19, and he says, "Well, I'm going to serve the king, whether that king is you, whether the king is Absalom, I'm going to serve the king." And what ends up happening is, Ahithophel, this previous counselor of David's, when Absalom seeks the counsel of both of them, Ahithophel says, "Well, what you need to do is you need to go after David right now." But Hushai says, wait a minute, David's a man of war. You back him into a corner, and he's going to be like a bear that's protecting its cubs, and he's going to be vicious. You need to wait, and you need to gather the forces of Israel, and then go against him. Well, what ends up happening is, that allows time for David to cross over the Jordan and to prepare for battle. You know, it's interesting because when David comes back to power, he actually follows the same kind of approach that Ahithophel had initially recommended. Because when his people pursue Absalom's people, they don't wait. They don't give them time. They go out immediately. And that may lead us to the conclusion that, well, if the counsel of Ahithophel had been followed, that perhaps David would not have been victorious. Perhaps he would not have returned. But it is Hushai that stays in this position, Hushai that actually gets the information to David about that and saves his life. There's a third character I'd like for us to think about during the same period of time. And his name is Shimei. Go with me to 2 Samuel chapter 16, and let's read together beginning in verse 5. 2 Samuel chapter 16, and let's begin in verse 5. We read the first four verses a few moments ago. Let's continue reading. Verse 5 says, "Now when King David came to Bahurim," Bahurim's a little bit closer to the Jordan. It's a little bit further north. It's before they're going to cross over the Jordan. "And when the king came to Bahurim, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. Coming from there, he came out cursing continuously as he came. And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David and all the people and all the mighty men who were on his right hand and his left. Then Shimei said thus when he cursed, 'Come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, your son. So now you are caught in your own evil because you are a bloodthirsty man.' Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, 'Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Please let me go over and take off his head.' But the king said, 'What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said to him, "Curse David." Who then shall say, 'Why have you done so?' And David said to Abishai and all his servants, "See how my son, who comes from my own body, seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamite, let him alone and let him curse, for so the Lord has ordered." I want us to notice here, and it's a little unclear to me. It's described, Shimei is described as one of the family of the house of Saul. So I don't know if we are to take that he's related, or if similar to Ziba, he's a servant. But whatever the case, he uses this occasion. When David's having to leave town, David's fleeing for his life, he lets it fly, doesn't he? He just tells him what he thinks of him. But, you know, there's an interesting thing about Shimei. Look with me over in chapter 19. Because when the tables turn and David is coming back home, I want you to read with me in chapter 19, go down to verse 16, and let's look at verses 16 through 23. Because when David's coming back, what do you think Shimei's attitude is? It's a little bit different. Verse 16 says, "And Shimei the son of Gera, a Benjamite who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba the servant of the house of Saul and his 15 sons." And we read that a few moments ago. Notice verse 18. "Then a ferry boat went across to carry over the king's household and to do what they thought good. Now Shimei the son of Gera fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan. Then he said to the king, 'Do not let my lord impute iniquity to me. For remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore, here I am, the first to come today to all the house of Joseph to go down to meet the Lord my king.'" Verse 21, Abishai's ready to take his life again. Notice verse 21. "But Abishai the son of Zeruiah answered and said, 'Shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed. And once again, David is merciful. We will find that Shimei will ultimately get what's coming to him, because David spares his life. But before David's death, he tells Solomon, "You know, you look out for him and ultimately bring his head down to the grave in blood. You'll know what to do. You're a wise man." Now, what Solomon does is he tells Shimei, "You come to Jerusalem and you live here. I know what you did to my father. You come and live here, but if you ever leave Jerusalem, you're going to die." And what happens is Shimei has some slaves that run away to Gaza. And Shimei, I guess, forgets what Solomon had said. And Shimei goes after them. And because of that, he is put to death. But one last character I'd like us to think about, and that is a man by the name of Barzillai. If you turn with me to 2 Samuel chapter 17. 2 Samuel chapter 17. Let's read verses 27 through 29. What we find is David had to leave Jerusalem and cross the Jordan. He came to a city by the name of Mahanaim. And there, you know, picture this in your mind. You've got, he's the king, but he's had to flee from the city with his people, with some of his family. He leaves some of his concubines behind, but he's got some of his family with him. He's got some of his court with him and his mighty men. But they hadn't planned this. They hadn't made all the preparation. So what are they going to do? Well, notice with me in 2 Samuel chapter 17, and let's read together verses 27 through 29. "Because there are those, even though Absalom has turned some within the nation against David, there are those that recognize David as the Lord's anointed." And let's read together in 2 Samuel chapter 17, verse 27. It says, "Now it happened, when David had come to Mahanaim, that Shobi, the son of Nahash, from Rabbah of the people of Ammon, Machir, the son of Amiel, from Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite, from Rogelim, brought beds and basins, earthen vessels, and wheat, barley and flour, parched grain and beans, lentils and seeds, honey and curds, sheep and cheese, of the herd for David and the people who were with him to eat. For they said, the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. Now, what is impressive about this is not only the fact that this man who has the courage to do this, you know, he's risking his life if Absalom does come to power. And yet he recognizes, I need to help David. And we might think, all right, well, he's a man in the prime of his life, right? No, I want you to notice, over in chapter 19, when David is victorious, we're told a little bit more about Barzillai. He's not a young man. In fact, I want you to notice in 2 Samuel chapter 19 and verse 32, that we are told this man's age. We were told previously that he's wealthy, he's well off. But let's notice what we learn in chapter 19 and verse 32. Now, Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old, and he had provided the king with supplies while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very rich man. Now, I point that out simply because, you know, it might be easy to think, well, there's not much I can do when I get older. You know, I can do things in the prime of my life. That's not certainly the case with Barzillai. He was able to help David at this very difficult time, even at a stage in his life when many would perhaps think there's nothing I could do. When David returns, Barzillai is there, and he actually helps escort the whole company across the Jordan. You know, if you've ever tried to cross a river, even though the Jordan's not a huge, raging river, crossing with little ones, crossing with animals is a difficult kind of thing, and Barzillai's there to help them do that. And because of his great care and help to David, David actually makes an offer to Barzillai that says, all right, because of what you've done, you come to Jerusalem, and I'm going to provide for you there. You come and you make your home there. And Barzillai, unlike others that we noticed earlier in our lesson, who seem to try to want to profit from the situation, Barzillai says, no, I'm an old man. I will stay where I am. Barzillai's sons will be a part of the court of David, and David will care for them. And we'll read more about them in the history of Israel later, but we'll see that Barzillai is not trying to profit from the situation. And we looked very, very quickly at four men. Four men that were living during the same situation, the same period of time. And let's just note kind of some distinctions and differences between these four men. First of all, we looked at Ziba, and we found Ziba to be one that was opportunistic. He's looking for a circumstance in which he can profit from this difficult circumstance. And, you know, David's put in a difficult position, isn't he? Because he cares for David, but he lied about Mephibosheth, didn't he? And I see in that this attitude of being double-tongued. You ever seen the kind of people that will talk one way to someone's face and then a different way when they're actually away or when they're there? That's Ziba. Ziba is not forthright. He's not honest in his dealings. But then there's Hushai that demonstrated bravery and was farsighted enough to recognize, all right, things look bad now, but I'm going to serve the Lord's anointed, and I'm going to be brave enough to look out for the one that God cares for rather than this rebel that's trying to take over. And we see in Hushai such bravery and such farsightedness. How much that is needed in our lives to be able to see beyond just the immediate, to see beyond simply the circumstances as they appear now. But then there's Shimei. And Shimei was one, I would describe him as foul-mouthed. I would describe him as disrespectful. Because even if you resented David, and you know, it's what's interesting is David hadn't killed the family Saul. It was the Philistines that did that. David had fought valiantly and faithfully for the house of Saul. And yet Shimei tries to say, this is your doing because you took over from Saul. But then he changes his tune when David comes back to power. You know, the one that would honor someone when things are going good, but then treat them disrespectfully and talk in an ugly way to them when things are going bad, that's just so appalling. But then finally we looked at Barzillai, who was a loyal servant of God and a loyal servant of David. He was selfless in his attitude and selfless in his behavior. He may say, well, that's interesting, you know, but what does that have to do with me? And how am I to profit or benefit from these four men? Well, you know, we all are going to face difficult times in life. Maybe it's difficulties within our home. Maybe it's difficulties in our daily life. Maybe it's difficulties within the church. How will we handle difficult times? Will we seek to profit from the misfortune of others? That's what Ziba did. He was looking for some circumstance in which, you know, how can I improve my situation? Doesn't matter what happens to somebody else. Will we be double-tongued? Will we talk one way to somebody's face and then a different way when they're in front of us? Or instead, will we be brave and farsighted? Will we say those things that later we have to regret? You know, difficulties in the home, how often that seems to happen. Well, I didn't mean that. My temper just got away from me. Well, think about Shimei. Things could have been a whole lot different for him if he controlled his tongue. And he'd not allowed the circumstance to lead him to say what later he had to regret on his hands and knees before David. Or instead, we'd be like Barzillai. Show loyalty, selflessness, not looking out for our own interests, but for the interests of others. Well, I don't know that I have ever heard a sermon that dealt with these four men, but I hope that the things that we have considered this morning have challenged us to think about the kind of character we should demonstrate as servants of God. If you're here this morning and you have never been obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ, I urge you to put your faith in Jesus as the Son of God, confess that faith before men, repent of sin that separates you from God, and be baptized into Christ for the remission of sins. If as a child of God, maybe the character that we've talked about in a man like Ziba or in the character of a man like Shimei has far too often been demonstrated in your life, would you not take advantage of the Lord's mercy and ask for the prayers of the brethren here to encourage you back to faithfulness? We can help you. Won't you come? Always stand and sing.